Hello and welcome to The Ordinary Knitter, the knitting podcast that's mostly about the projects. Hello and welcome to episode 14. This week, project or process knitting, holiday knitting, afterthought heels, and knitted summer hats. Not sure about those. Hello and welcome to episode 14. I mentioned last week that I was turning cartwheels because one of my favourite knitting tutors and broadcasters, Stacey Perry of Very Pink Knits, is now releasing a podcast every week. It's very short, it's just 20 minutes, there's only been the two episodes so far, and they've taken the form of a Q&A based on the questions that people submit to Stacey, and she tends to get the same questions over and over again, so the questions that she discusses on her podcast are very topical, and quite honestly, I could totally parasite her podcast, if that's a verb, because everything that she talks about so far is something that has arisen for me or something I've wanted to talk about, but I shall resist the temptation. However, one thing that she talked about in this most recent episode really struck a chord. It's something I've actually thought about before, I just hadn't given it a name, and I thought it would be really interesting to raise it today, see what you think. She was discussing whether somebody is a project knitter or a process knitter. If you're a process knitter, you're knitting for the love of knitting, and if you have to rip the jumper out 7 times and keep starting again, that's absolutely fine because it's just more knitting. If you're a project knitter, you just want to get the thing finished. Obviously, you're enjoying the process or you wouldn't be doing it, but essentially, you're knitting socks or knitting a jumper or knitting a present for somebody because you want to have that finished article. It's something you want to wear for yourself, or like me, you've got about 30 seconds left to get something in the post because you need to get a present to somebody, all that sort of thing. And listening to Stacey and her co-host Casey talking about this, I realised very much that I'm a project knitter. What are you? I know very much that when I work out that I'm going to, you know, I research a pattern and I check the yarns and this and that. I mean, you've heard me waffling on for weeks now about the whys and wherefores of a certain pattern, and that's because the finished article really matters, whether it's that the fit really matters for me or that the item I've chosen is really suitable for the intended recipient, or generally that the thing I want to do fits the bill. So I've identified very much that I am a project knitter, but nonetheless the process does come into it a bit. These days I will rip out more than I used to. Once upon a time I would have tolerated a greater level of mistakes. These days I generally don't do that unless it's really small, it's in a pretty invisible spot and I really don't think it's going to matter, and usually that it was lots of rows back. You know, if it's 15 rows back on a big thing, I think we'll just move swiftly on. But if it's just a couple of rows, I mean, the other day when I was knitting socks, I'll talk about those later, I've started more socks, I realised that on the increase rows I had one rogue increase, well, I was in the increase stage because I was doing the toe, but I had one rogue increase on what should have been a plain knit round. Now, once upon a time that wouldn't have bothered me in the slightest, I just would have compensated for it in the next round, but this time I tinked back nearly a whole round of knitting. I knit my socks 2 at a time, so that was 2 sets of 80 stitches, small stitches, to get back to that increase and take it out, and I felt better for doing that. So there was an element of process knitting in that I was quite happy to do that. It didn't bother me because I wanted to. Part of the process, I suppose you could say, for me in that instance, is that the sock was knitted correctly. But I thought that was a really interesting thing to raise. Stacey and her co-host are quite different. Stacey is a process knitter. Casey is a project knitter. She likes to have the finished thing. And I do urge you to listen to that podcast because it just raises so many interesting things and gives you some food for thought as well. The next thing I mentioned in my intro is holiday knitting. Now, usually this isn't an issue for me because usually I don't go on holiday, but this year is different. I have a trip to Budapest coming up. In fact, I'm going in about 10 days. I wasn't sure actually initially what the rules were about taking knitting with you. One of the sort of minor things I have to take into consideration is that there isn't going to be anybody coming with us who's not flying because the airport is a long way from where we live. We've got a 3 or 4 hour drive to get there. So I can't, if they say, oh no, you can't take that with you, there's nobody I can hand it to and say, could you look after it for me please until I get back. I don't have that option. If I take it with me and I'm not allowed to travel with it, I'm completely stuck. And quite honestly, the thought makes me want to cry. I mean, the prospect of having to put your knitting in the bin because you're not allowed to take it. Now, I think I probably could get away with it in the hold, and if I take any with me, I think that's probably what I'm going to end up doing. We've pushed the boat out and we've got some baggage that we're going to check into the hold, as well as our cabin baggage. Because the other thing is, I'm not sure I'm going to have the elbow room to knit, to be quite honest. We're not exactly travelling, you know, at first class. We're in steerage. So I might just accept that I'm not going to be able to knit on the flight. I've had a look at the conditions of carriage, and they do say you can't take sharp objects, but clearly the person who wrote that's not a knitter, and as far as they're concerned, sharp or pointed objects are things like pickaxes and axes, which I don't normally knit with, although one or two items might make you wonder. So I can't see really why I shouldn't take it, but I just don't think I'm certainly not prepared to take the risk of having to leave it behind. I tweeted the airline and asked them, but I haven't had any response. But I suppose that's part of the downside of going with a budget airline. You know, you pay for what you get. And I was wondering what I should take with me on holiday knitting. The two main projects that I need to do are another pair of socks for my husband, which I have actually started, and I also need to start the multitude of jumpers that I've promised my son. He's going to be 8 in December, and I think he was 6 when I made most of his current jumpers. So come this winter, he's suddenly going to go, oh, I haven't got anything that fits, and I really don't want to have to be knitting like stink again to get it all done. So I really want to start it now. But of course, the issue I have is that because neither my husband nor my children are going to be with me on this trip to Budapest, I won't have them there to fit things on, and I think that's going to be a bit of a niggle. I may get these socks finished before I go, so they won't be a problem, although there's something else I might need to knit, which I will mention. But I'm not going to get everything plus a jumper made before I go, so I can't actually think of anything that I could take with me that I don't need to fit on anybody, unless I'm going to make something a little bit more heavy duty, like the DK wrap top that I was talking about before, that I would like to make for myself for the winter. I've got a lovely grey yarn that will be just perfect for that, and if I like it, I've got some black DK as well, which I can see I could make myself another one. I could, if it works out, I can see it being the kind of thing I wonder how I ever managed without, you know, how that is. So I don't really know. I'm in a bit of a quandary at the moment, because the other thing that I had thought about was knitting myself a summer hat. Now, I clearly sounded a bit about that in the introduction, because I really don't suit a flower pot hat. In fact, there aren't that many hats that I suit, but I in Budapest, I'm not going to get away without one. We have got an old black baseball cap with a brim that I could use, and the great thing about that with baseball caps is because they've got the hole and the adjustable bit at the back, I can stick my hair in a ponytail or in some sort of scruffy knot to get it off the back of my neck, which is what I tend to want to do when the weather's really hot. And I, you know, I can still do that. On the other hand, it's black, so my head's going to boil like an egg. So I'm not quite sure what to do. I have quite a big head and lots of hair, so any old hat doesn't necessarily fit. My mother kindly sent over the other day with my father a sort of floppy white summer hat, but I couldn't actually get it on. And they had some rather nice hats in Aldi the other day. They were slightly Margot Ledbetter, but They were very wide brimmed and slightly floppy, and that was in navy blue, and the crown was in a natural straw, which actually looked rather nice. They were a bit 70s, but, you know, I mean, believe it or not, some people did manage to be a bit stylish in the 70s, and it kind of had that about it, but I tried it on and I couldn't actually cram it on past the peak of my head. So there we go. I don't think I look like a lollipop. It's just one of those things. It's a problem I've always had. And I was looking on Ravelry just now, and I found one knitted summer hat, which I thought might have some virtue to it. And it obviously will be a bit of time to knit, but I've got 10 days, and if I put these other socks to one side for now, I don't think there's be any problem in getting this made in 10 days. Whether it's going to look any good is another matter. Whether actually the finished article will look as it's meant to and not look too mangled, and then whether it suits me, again, that's another issue. But again, it's the kind of thing my mum might wear, because I had a hat, a similar-ish style. It's a little bit like a cloche or a little bit like a poke bonnet. It's got that, not just the brim, actually right round to the ears, it has a brim that sits forward. Now, it might look absolutely ridiculous, but I've got the DK and I can just rip it out if I think it looks awful. I can just reuse the yarn. So almost just out of curiosity, I might have a go at this, because it includes one or two techniques that I have never done before, including, believe it or not, an I-cord. I've just never made an I-cord. I've never needed to, but I see them referred to. So I'm quite interested to give that a go. The pattern is called, Sun Visor Cap by Chris de Longpre. It was originally published in July 2004 in Knitting at Noon Designs, that's K-N-O-O-N, and it was in their 2005 knitting calendar, but it's available as a free Ravelry download. I've had a look at it, and as I was talking before about not reading through patterns and then finding you bump into something unexpected, but I have had a quick skip through the pattern, and I was wondering whether you were going to have to sort of steam it over a head-shaped, you know, sort of mould or something complex like that, but it looks like all the shaping is done just by clever knitting. I can see there's a lot of wraps, and wraps are something I once tried to do, but I really came unstuck, and I didn't know anything about wraps at the time. I asked on Ravelry, and somebody said, well, the thing that's odd is that your wraps are at the beginning of a row, and you wouldn't normally do that, and that's making it really difficult for you. Now, I didn't know where you put wraps. I had never used them before, and I didn't look at it and think, oh, it's at the beginning of a row, that's going to be a problem. I just didn't have that knowledge. So we might have a go at that. I'll see what I think. You know, as I say, I'm sure I can find a home for it if it looks really awful. I could even just stuff it in my luggage and see if anybody, it's going to be quite a few of us out there, see if anybody wants to borrow it, although I suspect the answer to that will be no. I found my sock mojo again. Hooray! I'm so pleased. I really, really missed it. As I spoke about a few episodes ago, I was so looking forward to getting back into knitting socks, having not knitted any for quite a while. And I found that last pair of socks that I made for my husband such a trudge. Which I identified was because there was just no variety in the pattern or the yarn, and I knew that I had to do something different next time. And inspiration struck the other day. Well, in fact, I sort of was struck by two inspirational bolts of lightning at once. One of them was to do a contrast heel and toe. The colour that I'm using for these socks is a very lovely, dark, very dark forest green. It's a Regia 4-ply. Next time I think I'm going to try some of the patterns colours, because people have been talking about those in really glowing terms of adoration. And so I'd like to give those a whirl. The Regia yarn, though, I find works very well. So I was planning to do the socks in this colour, and as you will have heard, if you heard last week's episode where I had a very giggly interview with my husband about socks, you'll be pleased to hear he's not in the house at the moment, so I should be able to keep a straight face. And he had said that he enjoyed the waffle construction or box construction, which is when you have five knit, five purl, five knit, five purl across the top of the foot, and you do that for six rows, and then you just reverse it, so you get this box construction. It makes it quite easy for me when I'm gauging where I'm at with the socks, because I know from previous experience that his feet, it's so many sets of boxes to the instep or whatever it is. So I'd already decided I was going to use that construction. And then I thought, well, why don't I just stick in a different coloured heel and toe? I saw it on something I was looking at, because I've got so many odds and ends of yarn, and usually I keep that for darning purposes. But, I mean, the lovely, bright, really, really lairy green, it could just sit in my stash for years with nothing happening to it. So I just decided to bite the bullet. So I started these socks with a really bright lime green toe. Actually, it used up all the yarn. It's ridiculous. I should know by now. I never cease to be amazed at how much yarn it takes to knit even the smallest thing. So I've used up all the yarn on the toes, but that's fine, because that's something, isn't it? That now I've moved on to the forest green, and I've started the box construction, and I love it. It is a bit loud, but I love that contrast, and I'm looking forward to seeing him with his feet up on the coffee table in the evening and seeing these bright lime green toes. So I'm enjoying just literally the yarns and the colours and the contrasts and the effects of those. I'm also enjoying doing the waffle construction. It's just that right level of interest. And because you're doing five stitches at a time, it's not too bad. It doesn't hold you up too badly. It's always a pain when you then reverse it, because, you know, you're knitting into purl stitches and purling into knit stitches isn't so bad, but knitting into purl stitches, I often end up splitting the yarn, and so I have to redo that and so on. So, but you know, there we go, it's only once every six rows, it's not too serious, and I'm flying along with them. Actually, they're coming on really well. If ordinarily I would expect comfortably to have these finished before I go to Budapest, but because I'm considering now making this hat, I'm not sure that I'm going to get them done, which is fine. And the other element that I had already planned to do, just to really, you know, sort of put the cat among the pigeons, was to include an afterthought heel. Now, I thought I knew what an afterthought heel was, and you probably think you know, or in fact, you may well know what an afterthought heel is. But actually, having read a blog post by Louise Tilbrook, what I was thinking of as an afterthought heel, and in fact what is commonly referred to as an afterthought heel, is in fact a forethought heel. And Louise Tilbrook makes the very good point that because you position it as you go along, so as you've knitted to the point where you plan to come back and put in a heel, you knit in a strand of contrast yarn to come back to, you're planning with forethought where your heel is going to go after you've finished the sock. And I thought that was a very interesting distinction, and not one I would ever have come up with on my own. And what Louise Tilbrook does is a genuine afterthought heel, which is that she knits a tube sock, which by the time I go to Budapest, if my socks still aren't that far forward, I could take them with me and just knit the tube and then worry about everything else when I get back. That is a possibility. So what she does is she knits the tube, and then afterwards she sort of fits the sock on the heel and puts in a stitch marker where she's going to put the heel. And then, this is really terrifying, she picks up the stitches. That's not too terrifying, although I've always got the scope to make a mess of that. But she picks up all the stitches that she needs to, and then she cuts the yarn, which I've never done that. I've never steeked, you know, that really, I mean, talk about, you know, facing demons and final frontiers and all the rest of it. My God, that's about as scary as it gets when you've just knitted a pair of socks on teeny tiny, teeny weeny needles with microscopically tiny yarn. And then you come along and you just cut it. Well, so I don't know. I don't know whether actually what I should do is a proper, what I now, I should think think I should learn to call forethought heal, just to get the idea of the whole thing, learn the fit, see if these actually work for my husband. Although from the reading I've done, it seems that if a Flegal heel fits you, which it does, and that's what I always use for socks for my husband, or what I always have used, then an afterthought or a forethought heel should fit you fine as well. So I've got Louise's tutorial. I will link to it from the show notes, and I just have to decide really whether I am brave enough to do that now, or whether it's something that is maybe a step or two on down the road for me. One of the things that I did wonder about, if this was a reason not to do it, is that looking at the socks that she's knitted, they don't have any difference between the sole and the leg, by which I mean her socks are just plain knitted. The ones that she's using in this tutorial are just knitted a completely plain stocking stitch all the way round. Then she comes along afterwards and works out where to put in the heel. However, I'm not doing that. Because the socks have this construction over the top of the foot, I do plain stocking stitch on the sole, because I wouldn't want to walk on that kind of pattern. And then, once the heel is complete, then I take whatever the pattern is, whether it's rib or box construction or whatever, I then take that round the leg and I knit with the pattern all the way up to when I start doing the cuff. And that's what makes me think that this genuine afterthought heel isn't going to work for this, because I'm not going to know where to start taking the pattern round the leg if I don't know where the heel has finished. Whereas if I put in a forethought heel and I understand what I'm dealing with, I can then gauge better where I should start to put the pattern in round the leg. So at the moment, that's really my biggest quandary. I probably have to do a little bit more reading up, but if I get to the point of just wanting to stick in the heel and keep moving, I'll just have to do a forethought heel and come back to the true afterthought heel another time. The sort of misgiving I have about that is that, particularly when I'm knitting socks for my husband, he needs the stretch in the socks, and you don't get that same stretch in stockinette. So I just don't know. My son also wants me to make him some socks, which I can do. In fact, I might make him some funky socks from all the odds and ends of sock yarn that I've got. I could make him some really sort of wild and crazy multi-striped socks. I've got green camo yarn, I've got red, pink and orange sort of fire yarn, I've got some leftover red, white and blue yarn. I've got all sorts of odds and ends which could knit up into some pretty cool socks if you're an 8-year-old boy. And I don't think his need for stretch is quite as acute as my husband's, so I might maybe experiment with those, putting in a true afterthought heel, because they'll be much smaller for a start. So if they don't work out so well, I haven't committed quite so many days of my life to it, so we'll see what happens. I mentioned last time, or even possibly the time before, no, it was last time, I mentioned the cloth I was making for my cousin's birthday. I'm really pleased to say that she loved it. I got a thank you note back yesterday or day before. She loved the colour, she loved the design, she's thinking of framing it, and she's not someone who would just say that. So that was great. I was really pleased because I enjoyed knitting it. It's one of my, you know, I've not made many forays into lace knitting, so it was lovely to have something appreciated. And it was also really satisfying to know that I had chosen well, if you see what I mean, taking into account what somebody likes and all that sort of thing. So that was very pleasing. I want to take something with me to my aunt in Budapest, because she's having so many of us. They're on holiday this week, and quite right too, they're going to have needed that break of calm and zen before the entire family descends on them. So I thought I would make her a variation on that same cloth. And the pattern that I downloaded, it's sort of two patterns in one. There's the version that I've knitted for my cousin, which has these quite strong ridges. If you look at the show notes for last week, there's a photograph of it as the featured image. It's a bit of a scrappy photograph. It's kind of a work in progress. It's sitting on the needles and there's various notions scattered around. And that's not me being arty, that's just me being messy. But the designer made a variation on this one, which has smaller, more regular scales, and it's not nearly as wavy. And I just thought, what the hell, you know, ring the changes. So I've made that for my aunt. I've just yet to block it. I've got, you know, got 10 days. You know, I've got loads of time, of course. That won't be a last minute panic. No, by no means. So I've used the same yarn because there's something about the way the pattern works. It just goes so nicely with this yarn. So that's just done and just waiting final bit of attention and going in my luggage. So I hope that receives as warm a reception. That's me for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Enjoy your holiday knitting. I will be producing a podcast, all other things being equal, next week, but there won't be one the week after because I will be gadding about in foreign climes. I look forward to talking to you next week. And in the meantime, don't forget Knitting Hour on a Thursday, 7:30 to 8 Thursday. 7:30 to 8:30 on a Thursday evening on Twitter, #knittinghour. Hope to see you there. Bye.